Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, I'm here. I just turned to the camera like I launched a Kickstarter, which, come on, Jocelyn, you guys didn't record a video and turn to the camera. Like, oh, hello, I didn't see you there.
Yes, for those of you who are wondering what Ryan is talking about, Embrace the Spoilers launched a Kickstarter this week. We are kickstarting a winter movie season of the show, so if you guys are interested in that, you can go to bit.ly/backets or backets.
Backets.
Backets to support Embrace the Spoilers in our winter movie season. But yeah, you totally threw me off by talking about the Kickstarter, and I was going to say when we came into the show, first of all, it's good to be back. I missed you guys last week. Mm-hmm. And second of all, that new intro, man, is so good. But then when I'm streaming, it's just like the main like Gamers Inn splash title screen, and I feel like it's not enough. I feel like we need a video intro to go with that now, because like it's so like hype and upbeat and fun, and then you're just sitting here staring at this like Gamers Inn title card. I'm like, not good enough.
Maybe we look into the possibility of having some sort of, I don't know, animation. I don't know whether it's like,
I'm sure I can figure out something.
We'll do something
like bits and pieces from video game trailers, I feel like would be good.
Yeah, doesn't Garrett have like animated, not like animated intros to, I know he has one for Overwatchers. I've seen it.
Yeah, there's one for tech too. So oh, I think go. I'm going to talk to him and be like, dude, how did you do that? Where did that come from?
Yeah. Throw the A-Move business train at the intro of the Gamers Inn. I think that's how it works. You just ask totally the business train to pull in to the station. Here's a video intro.
Because, yeah, I feel like that is definitely what this show is missing now with that awesome new intro. So keep your eyes open for that, because I feel like it needs to happen. So,
You have a to-do list you can add that to, right?
Oh, yeah. My to-do list is totally not like 8,000 things long.
No wonder you are so apprehensive about getting to-do lists. Live, happening live. Nintendo of America just tweeted that we will get a preview trailer of the NX tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Oh, man. So clearly they know that we are doing a show on Wednesday night, so they have to screw us over by doing it Thursday morning. Maybe we should move the show to Fridays.
Yeah, we've done that before. It works, right? Like, actually, I don't think we had many issues recording on Friday nights, because we don't do a lot of, I mean, I won't speak for anybody, but Friday nights I'm usually like, blah.
It's, yeah, I think Friday nights was a combination of us being exhausted from a full week of work, and then also the fact that it's the weekend. Anytime anybody wanted to go away for the weekend, then we were having trouble coordinating when we do the show. Anyways, none of that matters, because it's time to talk about what we are playing. Mm. And this week, I'll be honest, because I've been sick up until pretty much yesterday, I haven't played a whole lot of anything, even Warcraft. I know, guys. I know. I had like a backlog of emissary quests. It's crazy. But what I did do today while I was working on something else is I actually kind of, in a way, played some Civ 6. Not really played it, but definitely watched it. Hmm. There was a really cool stream put out by 2K that was on Twitch today, and it might actually still be going, although when I checked about an hour and a half ago, it was kind of getting to the end of the game, but they had 8 different AI civilizations playing against each other.
What?
So, it was so cool. So the only thing is, it looked like the Aztecs were winning, and that is the pre-order bonus civilization. So kind of like, okay, so are the Aztecs OP, and are they trying to get me to pre-order, or what's going on right now?
That
so,
money grab right there.
Yeah.
The thing about the pre-order bonus is that if you look into it, it's actually free for pre-order, but it will be free to everybody else 90 days later. So like, you're
exactly.
only
so
good
you're not
for
a
90
competitive,
days.
Yeah, if you're not doing competitive multiplayer Civ 6, then you're probably fine not to have the Aztecs.
That would be the most boring esport ever until like Gandhi just nukes the field.
Yep.
Peace and love, peace and love. You know that you've been busy when I text you, are you going to pick up Civ 6? And no response. Because I just assumed, like, like, man, Jocelyn is super busy because, like, when Civ 6, it's like a keyword. Civilization, boom, she's ready to go. Let's play some Civilization. So I'm glad you checked it out because, honestly, I know nothing about this game besides the fact that I'm going to probably play one game for 18 hours and then be like, I did it. I beat Civ. I can now shelve it until the expansion comes out. So, A, my original question, are you excited about Civilization 6? And B, yes. Are you picking it up on Friday? Because I'd really like to know whether this game is any good. So.
Well, and that's kind of the thing about, I'm really excited for Gamers In next week because I'm going to have hands-on experience with Battlefield 1. I'm going to have hands-on experience with Civ 6. Like, this is the last week of Warcraft dominating my gaming life, which is kind of crazy. So,
which is great because you just launched a show to talk specifically about WoW. So, like,
right?
You're in an opposite scenario where I was thinking, like, man, Jocelyn's not going to have anything to talk about. She's got a show for Hearthstone. She's got a show for WoW. Like, she's going to have to spread her wings out a little bit here. But now it's like, now those shows are going to... Well, you have patch notes coming next week, so you'll be fine. But
oh, yeah, that's true.
Civ 6, it's one of those games that I have not been paying attention to any sort of media coming up with this release. All I know is that it looks fantastic. Like, the civilization sort of discussions that you have between Civ leaders... It looks really cool. I love the art style they've gone with. It's not like realistic, but it's kind of like a cartoony realistic. Mm-hmm. It's very neat looking. Do we have a final list of all the races that are going to be in it? And has Canada finally made the cut or no?
I don't believe. Let's see. Civ 6. I'm literally live Googling this right now.
Because I need to know. Like, it's not going to stop me from buying the. It's not going to stop me from not buying the game. It's not going to stop me from buying the game, but I don't know. Like, everyone says, like, oh, well, they can mod it in. It's like, it's just not the same. Like, give Sir John A. McDonald a little love. Come on.
It's really funny because that's been something that's been modded into every Civilization game I've ever played. You can always download a Canadian Civilization mod, and yet it's never, like, there's all kinds of, like, First Nations. There's, you know, the Americans obviously have their own race. But for whatever reason, Canada is never on the list. So we've got Greek, Russia, Arabia, Samaria, Rome, Norway, Congo. Congo?
How come Congo? Congo gets one. Like,
India.
I saw that movie. Spain, it was terrible.
Germany. Scythia? I don't even know who that is. Brazil, France, the Aztecs, China, Japan, Egypt, England, America, and that's it. So that's 14. Was anybody watching how many times I redid the 5 on my hand? I was like counting them off of their counting.
Here's the thing, though. I wonder, like, okay, we didn't make the initial list. I understand that. Nobody thinks about Canada. The only movies that have ever thought about Canada is like Canadian Bacon and that one... with the two brothers that drink a lot. Like, we need a Canadian civilization. But I've heard people say, oh, Ryan, just hold on there a second. Because of the sort of time frame that they place everybody in, which is like, I don't know, like early 1600s, 1700s era, like very early, like pre-1800s. And I could be wrong here.
It starts like 2000 BC.
No, I know that. But usually the race, the civilization leaders are sort of like 1800s and below. Like, you've got George Washington. You've got, although I might be just talking out my ass here because I really don't know. But anyways, I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, well, they have Britain in there. And technically Canada would just be like a reskinned Britain. And I don't think that's right because I think you got your whole like culture in there and you have a chance to be really unique. Jimmy says Canada is just uncivilized. Like, maybe for the time frame they're aiming at, like, we were, you know,
well,
we didn't...
I think any kind of time frame argument really goes out the window when you have the Americans in there, because I think,
exactly,
you know, the same argument could be made for, you know, Americans versus Canadians. Like, Canada is enough of its own country and its own culture that if they're going to put the Americans in there, even though America didn't exist until the 1700s, then you can absolutely put Canada in there because they were literally found at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Like, there were explorers and settlers in America and Canada at the exact same time because, guys, it was just the East Coast. There was no border between countries. Like, come on.
Yeah, and they're doing, I believe the American leader is Roosevelt. So that's, I'm probably wrong, but I know, I think that's one of the world wars. That's either World War II or World War I, but I think it's two. So, and again, not an American historian, and we'll get into history a little later in the show, but I think that, okay, we didn't make the initial list. I'm fine with that. And I know America gets in. The game is an American game. If they didn't have the American civilization, like, people would riot. It's like, why? Like, you made the game in the States. You can make the American civilization. But can we at least get DLC? Like, I would love, if there's a write-in campaign,
like,
for civilization.
Official, though, yes. Not some sort of, mod. Yeah. And not that the community mods are bad. The community mods are usually amazing. Amazing. It's just that it would be nice to be recognized by the actual company.
Yeah, it would
considering
be.
Considering this is Civilization 6 now, like.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I've been patient. I've waited five iterations plus a bunch of expansions, and they sell a lot of DLC, and they scrape the bottom of the barrel. And I got to address Ron in the, he spelled the wrong, but he is saying that our American historic sense is way off. We're Canadian. And I don't think...
Yeah, we're both Canadian.
You can fault us for that, but...
Spoiler alert!
I guess there were two Roosevelts, so, like...
Yeah, there was Franklin and Teddy.
I mean, maybe if Ron Ninja in the chat room can say which you know... Oh, there were two Trudeaus? What's happening?
Well, yeah, FDR, Jim is telling us, is the one from World War II, which he's the Pearl Harbor speech guy.
Who's the big guy with the glasses? Because that's the one in the image that I...
That's Theodore Roosevelt.
Okay, and he's the bear guy, right? He's Teddy.
Yes, he's Teddy, yeah.
Canada's America, too. All right, how do we ban people? No, I'm just joking. I'm kidding. I love you, man. You're amazing. But I think it would be nice to at least get a DLC version of it. And I know we've had this conversation a few times. Like, Gamers haven't been around the block. We've been around for a couple Civ releases.
We're coming up on 5 years of Gamers In, by the way, within about a month and a half. So there's that.
Exactly. It's been 5 years. That's two Civ games, plus that weird sci-fi release that nobody talks about. And they didn't even have a Canadian. They didn't even have an American one in there.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to have that Canadian civilization. And you could get really creative with it. You could go, like, very easy with Sir John A. Macdonald, or I've seen a couple of mods use Sir Wilfrid Laurier and a couple of other, like, midpoint leaders. But yes, so what if it's a reskin of the British Empire or whatever? But I think that's still fine. Like, do they this brings up another point. Do they have Australia in there? Like,
nope.
India? They have India. Although I don't know why.
Yes, India is in there.
But they don't have Australia. So, like, maybe there are some other countries that need to be represented before Canada. But I don't know. Like, it just seems easy, you know?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of countries that share a lot of pieces of Canada, because Canada is very much we used to talk about in school how America was like the melting pot, and everybody who came to America very much became, you know, American, and it was, you know, a little bit more culturally. And when I'm talking about when I was in school, I am talking like 20 plus years ago, guys, so don't get all jumpy on me now. But we used to talk about America as the melting pot, and how everybody, like, it was very much like a monoculture versus Canada. When we talked about Canada, we always used to talk about the tossed salad, because, you know, you've got all the different colors and all the different things, and everything in the salad is different, but together the salad is great. And so it was always the melting pot versus the salad. Oh. And so, I mean, I understand that Canada has, like, a lot of pieces of other countries and cultures within it, but I still think that Canada itself has a very interesting and unique culture overall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as much as, you know, I can play as France, and I can play as England, and I can play as the States, and all of those have a little bit of, like, a piece of what would make Canada, I still feel like it would be fun, and therefore, and because it pulls from so many other different things, I think that there's a way to make Canada a unique experience without having to it just be a reskin of the British. I don't think that that's what Canada is.
Yeah. Oh, no. I agree. I think we're very unique, and you could be very creative. But I just think that when you look at each Civ release, you'd think obviously they're changing up gameplay. They're making things simpler. They're adding new functions and whatnot. But the core concept that it starts with is that civilization. And I would think that you would want to mix it up as much as possible and not just continuously remake the same ones over and over again. Okay, let's put our Gandhi in, let's put our Russia, let's put our London, let's put our, you know, I'm being so reductive, you know, the United Kingdom, you know, you could probably, you know, oh, the States, Brazil, like, okay, we have all our base 15, and then the DLC can be like a rehash of the older DLC plus maybe one or two like new ones. Like, they get creative. Like, well, the one you mentioned that we kind of scoffed at was a like smaller unknown country, and I mean, that's probably them being super creative, and maybe they just think they can't be creative with Canada, or they feel like they can be more creative with some of the other countries that they have available to them.
Which is very, very true. There are so many countries and cultures and civilizations that aren't represented in the game, and that's fine. And they are branching out in a lot of ways with a lot of more like larger ancient civilizations. And it's only because we identify so much with Canada and as Canadians that we want ourselves to be represented in there. But there are so many different things that you could represent in a civilization game that I really don't blame them for not putting Canada in there. I wish it was. But I think it's going to open up a lot of people's eyes, including my own, into what civilizations there were. Like, it's almost like a history lesson. So, and I know, like, when you're talking about, like, ancient civilizations and a history lesson, doesn't sound like it's going to be a fun game. But let me tell you, Civilization, so good, guys. It's so much fun. It's addictive to the point that you start up a game and you look at the clock and it's like noon. And then you look at the clock again and it's like 12:30. And then you're like, wait a minute, I feel like more than half an hour has gone by. Oh my God, what do you mean it's after midnight? And you're just like, you lose your whole entire day to Civilizations. It's really, really, really fun. So I'm looking forward to the new iteration. We're only a couple days away, which is why a pre-order at this point isn't even so much of a pre-order anymore. I mean, it's literally coming out on the 21st and today is the 19th. So if you are going to pre-order, I highly suggest that you do that, because you do get access to the Aztecs 90 days earlier than anybody else, which, you know, you might as well have your full Civ experience. Mm-hmm. And you're not really losing out on anything, and you're not, you know, doing anything wrong, quote unquote, from a pre-order perspective, because I know there are some people who are very much against pre-orders. But I mean, at this point, the game's already made. It's coming in 2 days. Like, it's barely even a pre-order. At this point, it's totally consumer friendly, as opposed to, you know, heavily weighted towards the developer side to pre-order within a couple of days of release. So
they're going to give you the content for free anyways. So, like, you can't be jokes on you. I'm not going to pre-order. Oh, wait, you gave it to me anyways. True Villain Manny in the chat room saying they exclude the native populations in North America. I believe 5 had, like, the Iroquois and a couple other Native American tribes, but I could be wrong. But I do remember the Iroquois being in there.
Yeah, they have mixed it up over the years. So, and they've also added a lot of expansions in the past that always come with new civilizations. So I'm sure that we're going to see a lot, especially if they have been included in civilization games in the past. I think they're just looking for a way to make all the civilizations feel unique and have their own kind of feel to them, and their own units and their own special abilities and all that kind of stuff. So I think they probably went with the civilizations that were the most unique and the most different for their base game, which is hard to argue against. So,
and you have your mainstays as well, like put in there.
Well, so. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So anyway, so that's what I did today. Was I watched 8 of excuse me. Sorry. I'm still getting over my cold, guys.
I was gonna say, all right.
Probably tell from the sound of my voice, it's still not 100%. But today I watched 8 civilization AIs go against each other playing Civ 6, and it was really, really cool. Unfortunately, I was working on writing something, so I couldn't actually listen to what was going on. But just seeing them like hop around and seeing all the different civilizations and all the different win conditions and the scoreboards and stuff, like, it's all very intuitive now and it's easy to see. So, I really, really am looking forward to it. And like I said, it is launching in 2 days on October 21st. So you guys should all go check it out. But what I'm more interested in hearing about, Ryan, is Battlefield 1. You did early access. I did not do early access. So tell me about this game.
So I have EA access on the Xbox One, just because I forgot to cancel it. And it's so stupid. You have to go to a website to cancel it. So I played because, like, I have the game pre-ordered. I'm playing it on Xbox One. I got a deal on Amazon, so that's where I'm playing it. And I really enjoyed the early access. I played two campaign sections, because they're not like missions. In total, there's six missions available to early access. So basically, I played the campaign, and then you get 10 hours of unlimited access to whatever you want in the multiplayer as well. Yeah. And my favorite thing about Battlefield 1, spoiler alert, I'm really enjoying it. My favorite thing is the history. There is so much history here, and I loved history in high school. It was one of my favorite courses, and the things I latched onto that I found the most interesting was the World Wars. World War One, especially, because they haven't really glorified that one yet, so you don't get your movies, you don't get your, you know, there's no Hitler, there's no, like, main baddie to worry about. It's just a bunch of countries, you know, thinking that war is great, coming together to fight, and then realizing, oh no, this is really bad, and then having it last 4 years. So in the game, they've sort of layered on all this history, where it's not just in the campaign, you're unlocking these codex entries that are very historical, just steeped in sort of facts and cool info on, you know, battles and countries that were part of the war and why they joined the war. So they don't just talk about the war itself, they talk about why they were actually fighting and whatnot. So that's interesting. But the really cool part is that they have these multiplayer modes called operations that are actually historical based. So the one I did play was like late in the war, the Americans joined, and it's a fight between America and Germany. And the way the mode works is it's similar to like a attack and defend, where you are Germany is the defending team, and it really supports the trench warfare. So and then
that's really interesting, because that was one of the original critiques of the game from a lot of people who hadn't actually seen much of it yet, is they were just seeing footage and it looked very much like a, you know, early Call of Duty, very much just generic war. And one of the big key factors in World War One was the trench warfare. And everyone was saying, like, that was like World War One was trench warfare. So where is trench warfare in all of these teasers that you're showing us? So it's great that they're actually showcasing what really happened in a historical sense when it comes to that trench warfare factor.
It's brutal. Like, honestly, when you play a lot of the shooters that have been coming out lately, it's like, oh man, and I use this analogy at work and people really liked it, but Call of Duty Black Ops 3, there's a knife and has a laser pointer, and then when you throw it, it has like rockets that come out of it, and then it stabs someone and they explode, and like, that's cool, you know? And it's not, you know, it's glorifying death and war and all that, and there's no real like substance to it. It's like, these robots are bad. They were created by a bad dude. You're the good dude, but you also have robots in you, and you're going to fight the robots who are being controlled by this weird dude. And that's like the story for every Call of Duty game that's come out in the land. Like, that's reductive. But then when you get to Battlefield 1, what they've done is they're like, okay, let's go back. Let's steep this in history. Let's give it a nice, good steep and bring it out, and let's just have all these facts out there for you. You know, mind you, if you want to go out and just shoot things and have a good time in your first-person shooter, like, that's available to you. There are missions and modes where there's no history. You're just strictly fighting to capture points and whatnot. But I was just really impressed that they layered on this history. So when you start the operations mode, playing as the Americans, you have three deployments, and you need to push the Germans out. And it takes three successful pushes to win the match, or three successful defenses to win the match. And at the beginning, I was playing for Germany, and it actually gives you a German intro. It's all in German, and it's all subtitled, and it's very historical.
Okay, I was going to say, did they just assume that you would know German?
No, it's like, this is going to be so historical that you are going to have to learn German to play this game. it was just really a nice touch. I honestly expected, you know, going into multiplayer that this was just going to be like, okay, let's shoot each other. Like, let's get this over with. And I mean, I'm sure after like 10 times seeing this intro, you're going to be like, I don't need to see this again. But it was just a nice touch. And it's like, the Americans have just joined the fight, and they're trying to push Germany back. And and they said a lot better than this, and the Germans are going to have that. And it's from the Germans' perspective as well, where they're saying, like, these Americans don't know war. Like, they're just joining. And it's very – and that's how a lot of the fighters in World War One felt about the Americans. Like, mm-hmm. you don't know war. Like, you haven't been here. You're just coming in here for glory. Like, we're going to chew you up and spit you out. Like, this is going to be great. And it really reflects in the game. But in the gameplay, that mode, there was a lot of trenches, and it felt – very much like trench warfare, where as the Americans are pouring over the sort of hill, because that's what you do in multiplayer games when you first start, you all just run over the hill.
You just run straight, yeah.
Yeah, and it happened, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I'm a German, and I'm like popping up and like shooting a couple fools, and they go down, and then eventually they overwhelm you, and they get into the trenches, and that's where it changes from a gunplay to a more like brutal melee game. So what I'm doing is I'm running around, and I'm doing the bayonet charge, and like turning corners and just like stabbing dudes and going like just impaling them, and it's so brutal. I don't know why I'm smiling so much, but
I know I was just gonna say that was the point that I was going to get to, as right. you're describing a very brutal melee style trench warfare. Do you think that it has gone to the point where it is too historically accurate and it's lost the game factor?
The only reason I'm kind of giddy about it is because it is kind of funny when you sort of charge up and you start running because your character like really like yells. It's almost so they're trying to be so accurate that it's kind of comical, but it's still like satisfying when you do that sort of takedown move. But there are moments where it's pretty brutal, where people will get up in your grill, and then you know instead of like stabbing each other, you're pulling out your trench shovel and you're like hitting them in the neck and brutally taking them down. And that's, you know, not necessarily like cheering moment. It's very brutal. And I don't think it takes you out of the game per se, but it's interesting when they said that they were going to take World War One seriously. And I think they kind of did it half and half. Like, they probably captured the trench warfare very well. Because, you know, when someone throws a smoke grenade in, that's a, you know, a chemical warfare weapon, you put your chemical mask on, and that protects you, but it limits your field of view, so it's very hard to see and shoot people. It's really interesting, and it's a nice change of pace as well. But I don't feel like they've completely gone towards the brutally historically accurate. They kind of do half and half. You know, they do it where it makes sense gameplay wise. And then I think they kind of stretch the limits. There's a lot of like automatic weapons. There's a couple weapons that are bolt action, but they reload very quickly. They might say they're super historically accurate, but I would be surprised if they didn't take some liberties there.
Yeah, which I think you kind of have to, because there has to be some amount of actually making the game playable as opposed to just a historical simulator, basically. So...
yeah, and you know what? I think that it serves a good balance, and it has to be fun at the end of the day, because it is still a game, even if it is trying to be this history book. And the campaign, I highly recommend anyone who's may not be interested in checking out the game full stop, you know, check out EA Access. You have that trial available to you. You get to play like basically 1/6 of the campaign, and it's the first prologue mission where it kind of sets up the brutality of the war, where when you're playing, it says to you, like, you're frontline infantry, you're going to die. So when you die, it actually shows, you know, the name of the character and then the years active, or, you know, birth to death. And that's, like, really haunting as you go out and try to survive, and you will die because you're being overwhelmed. And that mission ends in a way that's, you know, very fitting for the setting. And then it goes into the campaign missions where you're playing like it's basically the tank mission, and it again very faithful to those tanks in that they were very finicky and coming in at the very tail end of the war as technology was sort of increasing. And I don't know, like I was actually really impressed with the campaign. Usually Battlefield's campaigns have been kind of like bro shooter, blah, who cares? It's just like, you know, oh, we're gonna go shoot these bad guys, these faceless bad guys. But yeah, in this, they really set up the history of it. Now, I'll be interested to find out if they give us like a turn as the quote unquote bad guys, or as like, you know, really how they're known, the guys who lost the war. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like World War II, I think, where, and I could be wrong, where playing as the bad guys, you were literally playing as the bad guys, because they were all very terrible factions, or at least that's, you know, that's how history portrays them, and that's
it's hard to argue with the Nazis and genocide and all the rest of it. Like, there were very terrible things done in Germany in World War II, and I think that you're right that it's a little bit more blurred in World War I, because World War II was very much a product of how World War I ended. You know, like, I mean, there was the expansion and that kind of stuff in World War One of the Germans, but it wasn't the atrocities that World War Two was. Yeah. And, you know, so I feel like I can see that where it's not so much like good guys, bad guys, as, you know, like winners, losers. And this is how we see them in a historical sense. I think World War Two, because there were so many atrocities, very much overshadows World War One in a lot of places, in a lot of ways. Even though World War One was, like, casualty wise and everything else, literally was the Great War, right?
Yeah. I really appreciate that they're doing this time period, because they easily could have just done World War Two and like, we're going back, you know, and we're going to tell the same story. This is a chance to do something different. And I feel like so far from what I've played, when they sort of showcase the quote unquote bad guys, or the Germans and the Ottoman Empire, they're not portrayed as these evil people, but they're portrayed as the opposite side. And at the end of the prologue, there's this moment, and I'm not going to spoil it, but there's this moment where you kind of see the brutality of the war, and also just like the human side, where people are, you know, realizing the folly of just all this death around them. And that's sort of the theme of World War One, where it's just like a lot of death. And I imagine the campaign will continue in that theme. And I'm looking forward to finishing it. Honestly, I think that's what I'm most interested in, is the campaign. And there's like six sections, all different sub stories. So you get to play them beginning to end, and it was about 2 hours to get through one subsection. So there's probably like a good like 12 hours of campaign in there. And
which is pretty good for a game and a franchise that generally focuses on multiplayer, which the multiplayer in Battlefield 1 is crazy big. I mean, and it's funny because I'm so used to you know, like MOBAs and things like Overwatch with your teams of 5 and 6. And then so I was talking to my roommate who is playing Battlefield 1 and really excited about it. And I was like, so yeah, we should totally play together and you know, figure out how to get a team in there or whatever. And he just laughed at me. And I was like, what? He's like, it's like 64 on 64. I was like, oh.
It's big.
Yeah, it's really big. It's quite the undertaking. So I'm excited to get into Battlefield 1. I'm excited to hear more of your thoughts. And again, we'll be talking Civ 6 and Battlefield 1 on Gamers In next week. But one thing that you wanted to talk about that I haven't actually given a try yet, because I was playing a little bit of Overwatch because of all the cool Halloween stuff. Mm-hmm. But you've been in Heroes of the Storm trying out their new mode that just launched this past Tuesday. Do you want to talk a little bit about Brawl?
Yeah, so Brawl is basically like the new Blizzard thing. Like, let's add the Brawl mode to every game we have. And I think, you know, World of Warcraft's version is probably World Quest, but Heroes of the Storm Brawl is actually probably my favorite iteration.
Well, the World of Warcraft one would be that there's like a weekly quest every week. So, it's a quest with bonuses to, you know, do time walking or to do arenas or to do battlegrounds or world quests or whatever. There's always a theme for every week. For sure, in those weekly event quests. Cool. But sorry, continue.
No, I honestly haven't made that far in WoW, and I do appreciate the. I'm getting there. I just unlocked World Quest. I'm enjoying it. So I'm like, now I'm looking at my map, and it's like, oh my god, there's all these icons. But with Heroes of the Storm Brawl, the thing I really liked about it is that I think it rewards people who love the game but don't necessarily have every hero, because I found that all your hero selections, at least in the mode that's up now, which is the Punisher Arena, all your heroes are random, and there is like a chance for the randomness to be a random hero for everyone across the entire brawl. So I played a couple of these. I played three modes, because if you play three brawls, you get 1,000 gold and a portrait, and that's in the next 9 days. And it seems like they're really going to be setting up those rewards and changing up the brawl every 2 weeks, I think, maybe. Because 9 days is, maybe that's patch time, I don't know, but it's a lot of fun. It's very quick. It gives you a chance to try out like new heroes that you don't even own. I even got to play as Samaru, the new like sword dude assassin. Mm-hmm. And I got to play as him. Now, mind you, you're not experiencing the whole version of that hero because you're basically starting at level 10 and you stay level 10. And it's very quick. Matches are best of three, and you just sort of jump in. It's a point system, so every kill of a person is 4 points, and when you kill the Punishers that are fighting each other, you get 10 points. And it's basically you just clash in the middle until someone gets 100 points, and then it goes on to the next round. And it's a lot of fun. It's just very quick. That's my favorite thing about it, is that I did all three games in one sitting. It was about an hour.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, everybody knows that I talked about this a couple weeks ago, how I wasn't excited about this iteration of Brawl, because when they originally announced it, it seemed very much more like Assault Mode in Smite, and it was called Heroes of the Storm Arena, and I thought that was really, really cool, the chance to play a set of random heroes against another set of random heroes. I was really excited about that. I'm hit and miss on Brawls, including Hearthstone. I'm not usually a big fan. I like playing a game with the rules of that game. I'm not a huge, huge fan of just messing with it. Mm-hmm. So I find that that's what they do a lot, and it's the same in Overwatch. And so I wasn't really looking forward to Heroes Brawl, and I know that that makes me sound like just Miss Negative Nancy over here, but... yeah, I wasn't really excited about it. So I'm glad that you've actually gotten in and given it a try, and it's quick. So then I can at least go jump in, see if I like it. And, you know, I'm in and out in an hour, you know, one way or another. So yeah. I think I do need to give this a try. I think I haven't given it its fair shake. That's for sure.
Yeah, you should try it. Honestly, it's very fun. It's very quick. And you don't even have to win the three brawls. You just have to play them. And... Mm-hmm. It is.
Oh, and you still get all the rewards even if you don't win?
Yeah, you don't have to win. Mm. You play three brawls, and that might change. There's going to be rewards for the three arenas that they have announced, which is the first one's the Punisher, which is the Diablo map, and then the Temple Arena, which is those like sand dudes, and then the Garden Arena, which is obviously the Shambler. But it's playing around. It's focusing the mechanics of the larger map. But I know what you're looking for. You're basically looking for a single lane, heroes fighting, giant, just, yeah. Well... Brawl.
Basically, yeah, exactly, yeah. Team fight all the time sort of thing. And yeah. But still with minions, still with pushing, still with towers, like, just no three lanes, no jungle. And I know that Heroes is a little bit different anyway, because they take the whole jungle idea to the next level, having different objectives for different maps. So
yeah.
I know that just having a middle lane is something that is probably not really what Heroes is about, and I know that there is a map that is just one lane, and you can do an ARAM, and yeah, but it's not the mode that I thought we were going to get, so it's kind of a little bit weird, but I'm trying to wrap my head around that and get past it, because I think that there is a potential for a lot of fun to be had. Speaking of a lot of fun to be had, I just wanted to remind everybody that you can head to etch.amove.tv or shirts.amove.tv to have a lot of fun with all your Amove swag. You can rep your favorite shows, including The Gamers Inn, The Angry Chicken, and Into the Nexus, so make sure you head over to etch.amove.tv and shirts.amove.tv for all of that fun. So this week we are going to talk a little bit of odds and ends. We have a few news topics, things that have come up in the last week, mm-hmm. including a huge announcement that I think everybody kind of already knew was coming, although thought it was going to happen at E3, and when it didn't, kind of went, oh, is this maybe not happening? Turns out it's happening.
Oh, it's happening.
Is Red Dead Redemption 2. So I know Ryan played a lot more RDR than I did. I enjoyed it, but there were, you know, when I got into it, it was a couple of years after it came out. I got it on Steam on some sort of a bundle-y, sale-y type thing. So it was very much by the time I got into it, I was used to newer mechanics, better graphics, all that kind of stuff. So it felt clunky to me. But that being said, I am excited about Red Dead Redemption 2 because I am right now we're watching Westworld.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole Old West type stuff, like, I am so in that mindset right now. Like, that is, I want it, and I want it bad.
And the funny thing is that when season two of Westworld starts next year, you'll have Red Dead Redemption 2 to look forward to, because I'm sure they will have commercials for Red Dead Redemption 2 during Westworld commercial breaks. Because honestly, with Westworld, they've come out publicly saying, like, yeah, we've been influenced by games like Bioshock and Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, and so, you can so see it in the show. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, fantastic show. It's amazing. But no, with Red Dead Redemption 2, it's kind of the worst kept secret, and that's okay, because it's really hard to keep these kind of secrets safe, unless you're Nintendo for some reason. But with Red Dead Redemption 2, I'm really looking forward to going back into this world, and I'd rented it when it came out, and I got halfway through and stopped, and then I rebought it when it came out on backwards compatibility, and I stopped, and I think I stopped because I knew we were going to get something else, whether it was like a Red Dead Redemption HD or just the sequel. So I think I'm going to go back to it now that this game is coming out, because honestly, and the trailer premieres tomorrow. So another thing that we're missing, I think we're going to miss the Nintendo NX reveal at 10 a.m. And then right after that, they're going to say, guess what? Red Dead Redemption 2 is coming to the NX, because that's why we had to announce it at 11 a.m. 1 hour later, which is interesting. Tomorrow is going to be a busy day. Hopefully we can keep busy with the things we were supposed to be doing, not watching trailers.
we had such bad timing on Gamers In this week. But so it is coming fall 2017. Like Ryan mentioned, we're getting a trailer tomorrow. So right now, basically all we have is a tweet from Rockstar Games that literally just had like Red Dead Redemption 2, like splash image, and coming fall 2017. So, I mean, there's some information, but still, like, everyone is just really, really excited. I know there are a lot of people in the games industry that have just touted RDR as basically like their favorite game ever. Mm. It was a super fun Western title when it came out, and everyone just absolutely loved it and still sings its praises. So, I mean, it was a while ago. It came out on the 360, so that's my fault. I bought it on as a used game at EB, not as a Steam title, so I was mistaken. But point is, I got it on sale a while after it came out. So, but it was that PS3, Xbox 360. Kind of era, and we are way past that now, so I'm really looking forward to what they're going to be able to do given all the new technology and new tools that are available to them, because I think this is going to be really cool. I hope the horses don't steer like cars, though. That's the only thing.
I do remember a lot of folks complaining about that, and I mean
you're riding by a tree and you get stuck on it, and there's this much space in between you and the tree on the screen, and it's because it thinks you have a hitbox that's like five times the size of your horse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they'll fix that, because honestly, Rockstar's kind of like, they're the masters of attention to detail when it comes to these open world games. And I think that's why this game has taken so long to build and so long to announce, because they want to make sure they get it right. And especially when you're building such a large game, you want to make sure that when you put it out there for everyone to see, it's the product that they're looking forward to. The fact that it's coming out next fall, I'm cool with that. You know, like, I was kind of anticipating maybe a May release, but I'm fine with fall. Like, that's like right in line with, we don't have to wait too long, but I could see if they had announced it like in May, that might have been a bit much. But
yeah,
nice to know it's real and we're not crazy.
We also got an announcement out of one of our favorite franchises, which is Smite. It is Smite Tactics. Ryan, do you want to talk a little bit about this? Because I got an email about this from Hi-Rez, and I didn't actually dive too into it. So do you want to give us an overview of what Smite Tactics is?
It's just weird. Like, because you're part of Hearst or part of the Angry Chicken, it's like, she does a podcast about a card-based game. We should probably email her first and get all the card-based hosts on the level. Like, this is the new thing. This is the Hearthstone killer. So this is a card, I think there are cards, but it's a turn-based strategy game, and you build an army from a large roster of mythological gods, all of them featured in the game Smite that we adore, and then you wage war in competitive or single-player adventures. And it looks very early on, but they're aiming for a closed beta before the end of the year. So this was kind of a surprise. Kind of a huge surprise to me. And the thing that I really appreciate about the announcement is that they're saying, in terms of animations, they can get away from the sort of esport container that means all animations have to be so many seconds, and kind of like space them out and kind of make your favorite characters from Smite do some pretty cool things and not just make sure that they're hitting in a specific amount of time. So I'm really looking forward to seeing some of my favorite Smite characters doing a little bit more than the quick sort of blah, you know, in game. But I'm really hoping that this connects with our Smite account and that we get the skins that we've purchased, or at least maybe one or two into this game, because you know they're going to do that. They're going to have skins for this thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be free to play all to hell. So, yeah.
So this actually looks to me a little bit, it doesn't necessarily remind me of what I would think like a Hearthstone killer would be, air quotes. But this actually reminds me a little bit of Gwent.
Yeah, it does look, it looks a bit like Gwent. I think it's interesting that they lead with cards, but yeah, you're right. Gwent, that Fable Fortune game kind of looked the same way, like more animation.
Chat room is saying Duelist.
Oh, okay.
Which is something I never actually got into play. I know that Duelist was like super popular in the Hearthstone community a while back, but I never really got into it. But I know a lot of players really loved it. So I love the Smite universe. I love the Smite gods and their interpretation of a lot of their abilities and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to just more Smite content. And I know that this is a game in and of itself, but I mean, I love that there's more in that universe. It's very much related to Smite the way that Warcraft is related to Hearthstone. So I just I'm excited to see more out of this team, because I like the Smite franchise and I like the Smite universe, and I didn't fall in love with Paladins, so I want Hi-Rez to do more in the Smite universe. So I'm excited about this game. I think this is gonna be really cool.
Yeah, I'm really really stoked to see more out of Hi-Rez, especially with a franchise that we already really love. And you know, a couple people in the chat room are Jimmy saying Final Fantasy Tactics, Fire Emblem, and when you mentioned Fire Emblem, I'm like, yes, all over it, please give me a free-to-play Smite Fire Emblem game. That would be fantastical. So,
and our final piece of news this week actually comes from an article that I found on Engadget, and it looks so freaking cool. So there is something called the Omniware Arc that the Kickstarter just went live a couple days ago for. And so basically what it is it's a wearable. Right now it is, I guess, compatible with CSGO and League of Legends, which are two of the biggest kind of esports titles that there are. And what it does is it connects to an app on your phone. And so when you buy the wearable, it's kind of like a necklace almost, actually. It's like a collar. And it comes with a mount, and what you do is you mount your phone on your computer screen so that your phone looks at the mini-map. And then when an enemy appears on the mini-map, it will vibrate the neck piece in a certain direction. So it's like a haptic feedback sort of a thing that normally has been just kind of a controller-only sort of a thing, you know, like when you get shot with something, or, you know, like when something happens in a game, your controller will vibrate. It's the same idea, but it's more of like a 360 sort of an application. So it allows you to spend less time looking at the minimap and more time actually playing the game. So it's a really, really cool accessory, and I'm super excited about it. I mean, it unfortunately doesn't have support for some of the games that I play, but I can see it having, you know, one of their goals on their Kickstarter is expanding the titles that it's actually compatible with. So that's going to come down to just the ability to read the minimap, right? So right now they've put their not facial recognition, but like pattern recognition.
Pattern recognition, yeah.
Their development time has gone into CSGO and League of Legends because they're such big communities. Sure. But I'm sure that could be expanded to other titles as well. So it's really, really interesting. I think it's so cool.
It's the thing that bothers me and about this thing is I thought, like, oh, is this one of those like bullet vests? So if I get shot, I'm going to feel like I got shot. But the way the video shows it off, it's like it kind of feels like like hacks. Like I don't have to look at the minimap. I can continue to focus on shooting people and ganking people in League of Legends, and I can have this necklace, this magic necklace, tell me when someone's behind me and when they're getting closer and whether I need to like turn around and do like, you know, and like kill them or something. I've never played League of Legends. So that's what's interesting to me. Like, there's a lot of like esports people talking about it in the Kickstarter, and I wonder, like, are they actually going to let you wear this Omniware Arc neckband thing? Because it kind of feels like you're removing a key part of the game by saying you don't need to worry about micromanaging looking at the minimap. This necklace will tell you. I'm not debating that it's really cool, but, and I like the technology, but
it's definitely an interesting point. I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's the same as a keyboard and mouse, you know, like if you have a normal mouse versus a super crazy gaming mouse, are you at any kind of an advantage? And, you know, I think it's a little bit easier to say that something like this, the haptic neck piece, is clearly putting you at more of an advantage than, you know, maybe a normal mouse to a gaming mouse. But still, it might end up being, if it's that widespread and so many people are using it, because obviously you can't stop people from using it in the day-to-day game, but you could potentially ban it from tournaments. But if it becomes super widespread and lots of people are using it, then I can see it being something that's provided at, you know, big tournaments, world championships, or at least allowed. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's just like, yes, it's definitely going to give you an advantage, but how much of that advantage is cheating? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, I don't necessarily consider it. I guess I wouldn't call it cheating, but it's certainly like, if you're wearing it, all your competitors should be wearing it, probably.
And I think that if it works the way it's supposed to, it's going to be to the point that, especially if it supports more than one game, then it's going to get to the point where it's going to be a widespread piece of hardware. It's going to be just the other thing that you need on top of your keyboard and mouse when you play Call of Duty, or not Call of Duty, CSGO, or when you play League of Legends.
Yeah. I'm interested in the technology, and I want to see more of this stuff. Like, gaming accessories, besides headphones, mice, and keyboards, and controllers, kind of fall to the wayside. You know, they're not as popular, so I would like to see more done in that arena to kind of see what we can do with it. So I actually love the idea that people could use it as, like, a proximity meter when you're riding your bike. That's interesting. Like, attach a 360 camera to the front of your handlebars, and that tells the device that, oh crap, there's a car incoming, you might want to, like, either stop or get the hell out of the way. I think that's really interesting.
Well, that's the thing. So basically, it's being marketed as a gaming accessory, as a peripheral, but there are a lot of real world applications that they're talking about as well. And I think that that's a really smart way to go about it, because if you market it as, you know, an entertainment device, then I feel like you're going to get a lot more interest than if you market it as, like, just a safety device, we'll call it. So, you know, like, you just get a lot more buzz, you get a lot more excitement around something that's tied to, like, League of Legends than something that's tied to bicycle safety. Like, who searches for bicycle safety on Kickstarter?
You're right. Like, you're not gonna hit your Kickstarter goal for going after those folks with the broken collarbones. Like, yeah, I do need to buy a 360 camera, smartphone, and this necklace so this doesn't happen again. Like, yeah, you're right. You're definitely right.
But yeah, so I just wanted to bring that Kickstarter to everybody's attention. It's not a cheap piece of hardware. I think the early bird price on one of these devices is $99, but then it only goes up from there, because obviously early bird prices are always lower. Yeah. So I think the normal price of one of these Omniware Arcs is going to be in the $150 range. So again, it's not on the cheap side, but it's cheaper than, say, a Razer Chroma keyboard. So, right. You know, like, it's one of those things, like, it is going to be a very niche gaming audience. It's made for hardcore players, but if you are interested, then head on over to their Kickstarter, and the link to that will be in our show notes. Just wanted to remind everybody that we are doing Extra Life. Yay, Extra Life. It is happening. It is happening October 29th. You can donate today if you'd like. You can go to bit.ly/TGI Extra Life 2016. Or you can wait until the day of, and we have a lot of our audience participation bonuses. So if you are able to watch the live stream, which will be... Sorry, I'm trying really hard not to cough. If you are going to be available to watch the live stream, it is going to be twitch.tv/amovetv, and we are going to be streaming all day for 24 hours, October 29th. So I'm really excited. I know Ryan's really excited, and there's going to be lots of ways to influence either what we're playing or to come and play with us on October 29th. So make sure you guys check it out. The other thing is, if you don't have money to donate today, if you don't have money to donate on the 29th, that's totally fine, because there's another way you can help us support this amazing cause. It goes towards the Children's Miracle Network of Hospitals. You can just boost the signal. Tell your friends and family, tell them what we're doing, tell them what we're doing it for, and that is just as good as an actual donation, guys, because we can only spread the word so far. So use your networks and help us raise money for the Children's Miracle Network.
Mm-hmm. That's super appreciated. It's like when I see our link being shared, that's almost as awesome as a donation, I would say. It's very much appreciated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's great to see the community rallying around this. And this is my fifth year. I think Ryan's done it for 7 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. And honestly, it's one of those events that I, you know, look forward to each year. And every time we get closer, like it's in 9 days. Like I have a stupid countdown on my phone and it constantly tells me, you know, like, you got 9 days left to make this thing work. And I'm like, oh, okay. We got to figure out what crazy things we're going to do.
We're veterans now. It'll be fine.
Exactly. Like, I think next year.
I'm such a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants person when it comes to Extra Life. And Ryan, I think I'm giving him, like, heart attacks and aneurysms.
I've had heartburn for, like, 3 weeks. It's been fantastic. No, I'm joking. Honestly, I think that.
He's not joking, though, guys. He's not joking.
I am joking, though. Just right now, though, I have heartburn because we're talking about it being in 9 days. But I think that with this event, make a good pair, because honestly, like 1 year you were like, okay, Ryan, yeah, let's go with it. And then I was like, okay, here's all the cool, crazy things we're going to do. And we still had a great time and we still had a lot of great donations. But it was like, we could probably just play the games, come up with some cool ways. We have some really interesting ways. It was actually suggested by Matt to do some really cool things to kind of make it unique in the way that we pick our games. So there's no schedule. We're just going to show up and play games, and we're going to play for 24 hours. I think we'll probably do the primetime stream that we did last time, like start at a specific time and go until we all fall asleep. that's what we did last year, and it worked out. So I think that, honestly, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's still a ways away enough that we can rest easy. I think we're still good.
poor Ryan. But one thing we also wanted to mention that does tie into our Extra Life stream is that if you are supporting the Gamers Inn on Patreon, that's patreon.com/thegamersinn, we are donating all of the proceeds from our October Patreon to our Extra Life campaign. So everything that we raise through the month of October that would normally be going to pay Ryan and I for doing the show is actually going to go into our Extra Life campaign. Every dollar is going to go to help the kids. And this is something that we've done for the past couple of years, and it's always very well received by our fans. So we just wanted to let you know that even if you aren't donating, and even if you're just spreading the word, then you actually are donating if you're donating to the show. So you guys can be proud of that. So again, that is patreon.com/thegamersinn. If you've been looking for a time and a reason to support the Gamers Inn on Patreon, October is a very good time to do that. Speaking of our patrons, we are having our patron hangout tomorrow, which is Thursday, October 20th at 8 p.m. Eastern. We will be streaming that on twitch.tv/JossPlays, so make sure you're in the Discord server, all of the information of which can be found over on our Patreon page. Make sure you are in our Discord server, because that is where we are going to be pulling people in to talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about. I'm sure that there's going to be some NX talk. I'm sure there's going to be some RDR2 talk. Yeah. All sorts of super fun, gamey, nerdy things are going to be talked about tomorrow on our Patreon patron hangout, whatever.
I think it took us like a good solid year to figure out, is it Patreon hangout or is it patron hangout?
I don't know. Anyways.
Whatever. Just hang out with us. We're going to talk about the NX. We're going to talk about Red Dead Redemption. We're going to talk about Extra Life. We're just going to talk. Like, what are you guys playing? Enough about us. What are you guys playing? It's your show. You're the guns that funded it. So let's get in the Discord. Tell us what you're playing. Tell us what you're not playing, maybe. I don't know.
All right, so that's going to do it for us tonight. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and Embrace the Spoilers. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/AMoveTV. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to let us know what you think about the Omniware arc or potentially Civ 6 and Battlefield 1, please email us at info@gamersinpodcast.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.